And I later get a MySpace message. And is this Matt Faust who dropped off these frat t-shirts? We sold out of those, and we need more.
You can play it safe at first, but eventually you hit a point where if you want to grow any more at all, you have to be in for a penny, in for a pound, and start taking the bigger risks.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hinken.
And I'm Laura Wexler. This week on the podcast, Passion Play, two stories about the thrills and threats of turning something you love into a way to get paid.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, which is one of our sponsors. They are wonderful, independent, progressive through grade 12 school located just outside of Baltimore.
So this first storyteller, Matt Faust, is a Baltimore, quote, entrepreneurial artist. And I really think he lives out the full meaning of that label. He has made a career, a business, a name for himself, making art out of infestation. And in fact, 2 months ago, so end of July, you may remember that President Trump tweeted about the rat infestation in Baltimore and why would anybody want to live here. And for Matt Faust, this only was payday for him because of what you'll hear in this story. And he was called on to make lots of quotes about rats and such. But just so you all know, we're only like number 9 in rat infestation in the city on. In the U.S. So come on. All right.
Cities.
So let's listen to Matt's story.
So I was born in a small town in central Pennsylvania called Huntington. Nobody's ever heard of it. It's near State College. And it was a very rural upbringing. Woo, one Huntington. That's rare. So it was a very rural upbringing. I did things like hunting. That was your normal daily life. After school, I would go out and I would shoot rabbits, squirrels, you know, whatever was in season, and bring them home to my mom and, you know, throw them on the counter. My mom would butcher them, make squirrel pot pie, rabbit stew, whatever I had shot. So I never really knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. I still don't. I wanted to do everything from month to month. I had no idea. I was a good student, and I was in a rock band in high school. So the people in the band were older, and the singer was going to Johns Hopkins for a master's degree. So I didn't apply to any colleges or anything, and I'm like, well, may as well follow him down. And a master's program takes most of your time. So we weren't playing any music, and I was hanging out in Baltimore, and I grew to love the city. So the city life was very different from my rural life, and I had brought rural living with me, and I would sit out back and shoot rats with a pellet rifle. And the neighbors at first were scared shitless of this guy. They thought I was a sociopath. I strongly remember walking down the alley with my gamma pellet rifle and seeing a neighbor in the back doing dishes, and she just went, "Oh!" Like, and I'm like, oh, hi, just your awkward neighbor shooting rats in the alleyway. So I, you know, the neighbors started to, you know, enjoy what I was doing. We would drink beer. We'd have a little bonfire. We would shoot rats, and they got into it. And the one neighbor, you know, went to Walmart and bought the pink pellet pump rifle and rhinestoned her name on it. So I wanted to make a logo for the neighbors that they would enjoy as our, like, little rat hunting club. And I started thinking, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of rats. We need a bumper sticker like Ocean City or any of those ocean towns you go to that has the oval. So I made a rat with B-A-L-T as a joke. And had a buddy who printed t-shirts. And I said, hey, Chris, print me 10 of these shirts. I want to give them to neighbors. So I handed them out to my neighbors, and they would come home from, you know, the local pub and be like, I was stopped by 50 people who somebody wanted to give me $100 for this t-shirt. They thought it was the funniest, most perfect shirt for Baltimore. And I'm like, Well, okay. So I went back to my buddy and I said, print me 50 of these shirts. In my head, I'm going to have a box of 50 t-shirts in my bedroom, not know what the heck to do with them. So I went up and down the avenue in Hamden. This is about 14 years ago or so, maybe a little less, 10. And went up and down, showed him the shirts. This is totally disrespectful. No one will ever, ever buy this. I can't believe you would put something on such a shirt. Funny fact, a lot of those stores, as it got popular, then later wanted to carry my stuff. So I'm about ready to give up, and I'm parked outside of a store called Red Tree that is now Trove. And I'm just, I'll try this one last store. I'm a beaten down, 21-year-old kid. And I go into this sweet store owner from the South, and I plop this box of shirts down, and I said, nobody wants to buy these t-shirts. Do you want to buy these t-shirts from me? And she's like, okay, calm down. Let's see these shirts. I'm beaten down. And she pulls the shirt from out of the box and goes, yes, I will buy every one of these shirts from you. And I'm like, somebody's going to buy these? Their problem now. I'm never going to have to see these shirts again. I'm taking the girlfriend out for dinner. So, of course, because I don't have my shit together, I left her no contact information. And this is the days of MySpace. And I later get a MySpace message. And is this Matt Faust who dropped off these rat t-shirts? We sold out of those, and we need more. So I couldn't believe it, and I was like, wait a second. I thought I was done with this. Like, I guess I have to print more of these shirts. So, that is how the logo has started. That... And it's crazy that I have no idea what to tell people what I do when they're like, I go back to a high school reunion. What do you do? I made this design that's got a rat. Baltimore's got it dirty. And, I've ordered the stickers from the same place the whole time. I'm over 500,000 of these stupid stickers that I've sold all 50 states. And it has created a job for me, basically. They're everywhere. And I recently did an interview, and I really had to think. They said, why do you think this works for Baltimore? And I had to think long and hard. Well, you see, I thought about this, and people in Baltimore are survivors. We have a lot of problems. We're always, trampled on, beaten down. But just like rats, they always run for higher ground and always come out in the end. They survived the plague, just like the people of Baltimore will. And it works. And that's basically, when you see this on a bumper of a car, that's the story of it.
So when he told that, he did a really adorable thing, which you could kind of hear, is that he pulled his shirt open.
Like snap-button shirt.
Snap-button shirt, and there was the rat
Superman
logo.
Style.
Yeah. It was great. He's such a likable fellow.
Yeah, and he is just, it's just so nice when someone's like, I'm going to do this thing for no other reason than I want to, and then it has this life, sort of like us doing the soup.
Exactly.
We just wanted to do it to entertain ourselves and possibly three other people. And look where we are 14 years later.
14 years, baby.
My goodness. And, if President Trump were to tweet about us, you would just go off on him. But I would say, let's take this to the bank, baby.
It would be...
You would lose your mind.
I don't know if I could survive
that. You would lose your mind.
Okay, we're going to just move forward.
Nonetheless, we're going to move forward and thank Baltimore Magazine, who's been a sponsor of the Stoop podcast and the Stoop live shows. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com. On the newsstand, they have all sorts of non-rat news about Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
And you can check out their podcast, Baltimore Boomerang. And we want to thank Golden West, where rat is not on the menu.
Nope, nor is it in the
restaurant.
But
they have lots of other stuff on the menu.
Well, it's vegan.
Is so delicious.
Yeah.
Vegan. No, but there's but there's lots of other really good stuff and great bar, great variety nights, comedy nights, all sorts of new stuff happening all the time. So check them out, Golden West in Hamden.
So this next storyteller, Jody Mascarotolo, right?
I think you got it.
Yeah. He is someone I have actually known for many, many years. So it's
but still can't pronounce his name.
Embarrassing that I do that. He is a Renaissance man, really. Photographer, dog lover. He's a great husband. And first and foremost for the story, he's an excellent dancer. So take a listen.
Cha-cha-cha.
Cha-cha-cha.
So it was about 5 years ago that my wife and I decided we were going to start a dance studio in Hamden focusing on a dance called West Coast Swing. And the first question I always get is, well, how is West Coast Swing different from, I don't know, the regular kind of swing? And it's a very visual art form, so that I can't say much that will really give you the idea other than just go YouTube it after the show or we have a booth here. You can come see us at intermission. We'll have videos playing. But I will say this. There are a number of partner dances, West Coast Swing being one, Lindy Hop, Argentine Tango, Salsa, all being others, where there is a community of people who that dance is their jam. Like, that is their thing that they do. It's not just the only dance they do. It's probably their only hobby. People in these communities not only go to a social dance one night where they will spend the entire night dancing just that dance, but my wife and I met at a swing dance convention in San Diego, where we were literally just doing West Coast Swing from Thursday night until Sunday night. And that was the kind of community that we wanted to build in Baltimore. So we started out in this little upstairs back room in a church, which is partly how we named ourselves Ministry of Swing. The other reason was it's just a Monty Python reference. And it was a pretty easy way to get started teaching classes. It wasn't an expensive space to rent, but it was pretty small, and we did start to outgrow it pretty quickly. There's a concept in small business ownership where growth is not a straight line. You can play it safe at first, but eventually you hit a point where if you want to grow any more at all, you have to be in for a penny, in for a pound, and start taking the bigger risks. So this is a story of the risk that we took. It was our decision to move out of that upstairs back room in St. Luke's Church into the old Ideal Movie Theater right on the avenue in Hamden. It was about five times as large. It was, of course, more expensive. It was prime real estate. But there were some things about it that made it just an amazing venue for teaching and hosting dance. First of all, it has these enormous 40-foot-wide storefront windows that are overlooking some of the best foot traffic in the city. And like I was saying earlier, dance is a very visual art form. If you're not standing there looking at it and really feeling what's going on and seeing that people are just having a ball doing this, I mean, someone can walk up to you and be like, hey, you want to come take a swing dance class with me? It's pretty easy to shrug it off. But I've very often said that those windows are like just our best marketing tool. And so our classes started to grow, our social dances started to grow, and the idea of building this core community that we were trying to build really started to take off. There were other things about the venue that were not perfect. So one of those things was we found out just before we moved in that there was a dude living upstairs. So we went to see him and we're like, hey, we're going to be throwing dance parties until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Is that going to be an issue? Like, I don't know. Is there sound transfer? Can you hear? And he, in just this very laid back way, he's like, oh, you do not have to worry about me and loud music. That's what he said. 2020 hindsight, what I think he meant was, listen, if you wake me up during my prime hangover time, I'm going to throw the ugliest hissy fit you've ever seen. And so he did. Now, that really manifested with part of what we had to do when we moved into this much bigger venue was fill the time when we weren't teaching dance. We had to do just venue rental, venue management to other promoters, other teachers, private parties. It wasn't what we wanted to be doing. And truth be told, we were first-time business owners. We did not anticipate some of the problems that we were going to run into. But we had no choice. We needed to make the revenue just to pay the rent. So one of the groups that we rented out to was a church group. It worked perfectly. They wanted the space at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. No one else wanted it at that time. So I gave them a key. It was just a set-it-and-forget-it renter. I stayed in bed, and they paid us a monthly rental check. Perfect. Except that they woke up our grumpy upstairs neighbor. Turns out he was also in a band, so he had a full PA system in his apartment and would start. His favorite retaliatory method was he would play normally heavy metal music during their prayer meeting. One time he played Highway to Hell. I'm just thankful that we found a pastor to rent to who had a sense of humor. Okay, but some success stories. We did have some other things that worked really well. One of the things that we really wanted to focus on was inclusiveness. So we flipped the model of most ballroom dance studios. So in most cases, they try and bring you in with group classes, get your feet wet, get you comfortable, and then the primary thing that they do is private lessons. Well, private lessons can get prohibitively expensive for a lot of people. So what we wanted to do is be able to bring people in and really teach them good, solid technique and get them over the hump, get them to the point of being part of a dance community without needing to break the bank. So we developed this whole huge, robust group class structure. In fact, if you're interested in it, we have brochures. So we did that. We created a whole code of conduct that had a declaration of safe space. And let's be honest, after 2016, there being safe space for marginalized members of the community was a really important thing. And it meant a lot to us to be able to offer that space to anyone and everyone who wanted to just come in and dance. Okay, so that was going well until the biggest surprise that we got was when the city downgraded our occupancy rating. Not 100% sure why. It has to do with the way they classify the type of activity that goes on in the space. But our landlord promised us 250 people, and they dropped us to 100. And it crippled us. Now, again, I said we were first-time business owners and made a bunch of newbie mistakes. One of them was that our landlord promised us an occupancy level, and I had them put it in the wrong document. So since it wasn't in our lease, it wasn't them being in breach of contract and needing to remedy it immediately. It was us needing to hire a lawyer, roll up our sleeves, and start the fistfight. It took about a year, and it took about $12,000. But we got our lease renegotiated. We got our rent reduced. There's a caveat to that, which is that they put in a provision that if they find someone who wants to pay full price for the venue, they could give us 60 days notice. And we have to hit the road. But until then, here's the silver lining, is that that one thing that we wanted to focus on, building community, is the thing that we have been able to do now for the last year since that negotiation took place. And we've had bigger classes than ever before. We've had bigger social dances than ever before. And if tomorrow we wake up to an email from our landlord saying, pack your bags and hit the road, well, then at least now, we're not starting from scratch. We've got this community of passionate dancers who we can find a new home, right? We can find a new place to dance. And we can find a new place to declare a safe space, hopefully one without an upstairs neighbor. Thank you.
So it's hard. It's a hard thing to do to, like, love something and try to make money off of it. And I feel like I could hear that it was still really hard for them. And, you know, owning a business, dealing with all this code violations, like the technicality of this lease and the highway to hell and all this. I mean, it's just like more than most people can take.
Yeah.
You know?
And the fact that they're married and their marriage still seems strong, and because they're doing ultimately something that they both still love doing. But yeah,
it's hard because, because when you make something a business, so much of it, you end up doing more of the business stuff than the actual thing.
Yeah.
It's just hard. So anyway, speaking of businesses, the Wine Source.
Yeah.
They like wine. They sell wine.
And
they like beer. They sell beer and good snacks.
Oh, yeah.
So you can find them at 3601 Elm Avenue. Tell them the Stoop sent you. And we also want to encourage you to check us out at stoopstorytelling.com. We'll have news about this upcoming season, all our live shows and workshops and whatever else we've got going on.
Season 14, baby.
Woohoo. And please leave us a review wherever you get your podcast content. We would love to hear from you all. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey.
Absolutely.
Who's Maureen turned Harvey. Her passion into a business. Taking it all the way to the bank.
Business of working for a local NPR affiliate.
Woo!
Big old bucks there, baby.
See y'all next week.